This is edition number 2006 of The Mardler, recorded in Aylsham on Friday, the 27th of February, 2026. Hello, you are listening to The Mardler, the weekly talking newspaper for North Norfolk. Today we bring you the week's news and views from the North Norfolk News of Thursday, the 26th of February, 2026. My name is Paul Cross, and my fellow readers are
Francis Doran,
Beverly Hopkins,
and Sue J.
On the notice board today, we would like to welcome a new listener, Bridget Hermes of Sheringham, and we hope you enjoy this and future editions. This week, the sun will rise around 20 minutes to 7 and will set at about 20 minutes to 6.
The magazine supplement will follow a little later in the programme and includes record-breaking number of archaeological treasure discovered, the village that time forgot, how the once extinct goshawk is returning to Norfolk, and 100 oaks mark Norfolk Wildlife Trust centenary.
But we begin with the main news items, which include Norfolk leaders' outburst, the move to unseat K. Mason Billing, sub-postmaster wrongful conviction, car park charging hike, quiet Norfolk town at the centre of international news story, £1,000 in tips stolen, asbestos-linked death, and lifeboat volunteer honoured. Let's start with those lead stories.
The North Norfolk County Council leader's outspoken attack on the government, in which she called a minister a bastard, could end up costing the region millions of pounds, her critics claim. K. Mason Billig delivered the broadside at Steve Reed, the local government secretary, after his shambolic U-turn saw him reverse his earlier cancellation of local elections and declare they would go ahead in May. The Norfolk leader claimed she had been threatened by Mr. Reed into not speaking out against the initial postponement and branded him a two-faced bully. She also withdrew her authority's support for the devolution process, which had been used as justification for the original election delay. In response, sources at Mr. Reed's department accused her of vile abuse and totally false fabrications. The extraordinary spat shows no sign of abating, and critics of Ms. Mason Billig have questioned whether it may have financial implications for the county. Her council is currently waiting to hear from the government about whether it will write off £36 million, which it has already spent on its ill-fated flagship Western Link Road. Leader of the Labour group at County Hall, Steve Morphew, Inset, who has written an article for today's paper on this issue, suggested her outburst might have harmed chances of help from Westminster. When you're relying on a minister to rescue the council, you lead from a financial crisis caused by incompetent political management of a failed road scheme. It is reckless to throw offensive insults at him, he said. Insulting ministers and blaming others won't deflect or distract from the fact that it is her Conservatives who are responsible and now seem intent on making matters worse for the people of Norfolk, who have already paid a high price. Meanwhile, the implications of Ms. Mason Billig's withdrawal of support from the process of local government reorganisation and devolution, which would have seen all Norfolk's councils abolished and new unitary replacements created, along with a joint Norfolk-Suffolk mayor, remain unclear. Some have questioned whether she will be able to stop the process or whether it will simply continue without her council's involvement. And if the process does collapse, critics point out the region may miss out on money it was due to receive from Westminster under the changes. Mr. Morphew added that Miss Mason Billing appeared ready to throw away millions of pounds of government investment promised to Norfolk in what he called a bizarre overreaction by any standards. How does she think ministers will respond to her insults, he said. Would you rush to do business with somebody who accuses you of bullying and calls you a bastard in the council chamber? For his part, Mr. Reed has been facing calls to resign over the debacle. Meanwhile, Miss Mason Billing has said she stands by her comments, but has declined to clarify whether she will stand for re-election when the polls are held in May. The Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government has been approached for comment.
The leader of Norfolk County Council is facing an attempt to unseat her amid the deepening crisis sparked by the U-turn over council elections. An email has been circulated among all members of the authority urging them to join attempts to force Kay Mason Billig to stand down. It was written by Simon Ring, an independent councillor, who accused the leader of having brought the council into disrepute with her response to the U-turn. Mr. Ring, who had pledged to resign his seat and force a by-election in protest at the decision to scrap the elections, said she had been profoundly unprofessional and called on all parties to force her resignation. He wrote, "We are elected representatives of Norfolk. Our conduct reflects not only on ourselves but on this entire authority. To use abusive language about a government minister in a formal council setting calls Norfolk County Council into disrepute. It diminishes the seriousness of the chamber and undermines public confidence in our leadership. For that alone, there should be consequences." Mr. Ring, who is also deputy leader of West Norfolk Council, questioned the basis on which she had withdrawn from the LGR process. He said her announcement was constitutionally alarming in itself and that she had no power to pull out of the process. "It is deeply concerning that the leader appeared to believe she could unilaterally withdraw Norfolk from a process that is not hers to cancel," he said. "Even if such a course were being contemplated, it would require proper constitutional process, formal debate, and a clear mandate of full council. It cannot be declared by personal announcement." He warned that the episode was part of a pattern in which significant positions and announcements are made without meaningful engagement with the wider council.
A Norfolk sub-postmaster who was wrongfully convicted of false accounting in the Post Office Horizon scandal has had his conviction quashed 8 years after his death. Thomas Millard, who ran the branch in Trunch, was forced to move his young family into a static caravan after being accused of stealing £5,000 and 4 counts of false accounting. His prosecution turned him from a sociable character at the heart of village life into a recluse who had to live with the shame of his conviction and the widespread belief, including among members of his own family, that he had been stealing. Now, 25 years after his prosecution and 8 years on from his death in 2018, Mr. Millard's conviction has been quashed after the Ministry of Justice found he was wrongfully convicted based on Horizon IT evidence. It followed a campaign by his daughter, Isabel Saunders, to clear his name. Mrs. Saunders, who was a child at the time of her father's prosecution, said it was important that the village of Trunch knew her father had been vindicated. "I hope that some of the people who still live in Trunch and those who still remember my father will now know the truth about him," she said. Mr. Millard had moved his family from Buckinghamshire to Trunch in 1988 to run the village post office. In November 2000, he was accused by the post office of stealing £5,000 and convicted of 4 counts of false accounting the following year. He was sentenced to 100 hours of community service and ordered to pay back the money, forcing him to sell their family home above the village post office. It led to Mr. Millard, his wife Margaret, and their 2 young children, Andrew and Isabel, becoming homeless, moving into a static caravan lent to them by a friend in the village. Mrs. Saunders, who was 2 when the family moved to Trunch, said, "It was a great well of shame within the family." She added, "It destroyed my father. He was never the same again because of the shame and the belief, even in his own family, that he had been stealing. I always wanted to know if he was actually embezzling money or caught up in her prize and scandal like so many others." In a bid to clear his name, she contacted the group set up by Katie Downey, whose family fled to France after her father Tony was made bankrupt in the scandal. Ms. Downey put her in touch with the solicitor Neil Hudgel, one of the leading lawyers representing and campaigning for justice and compensation for sub-postmasters caught up in the scandal. Together, they managed to quash her father's conviction a quarter of a century after his prosecution. Mr. Millard died of metastatic lung cancer, a cancer which spreads from the lungs into other parts of the body, in 2018. The old Trunch post office closed on the day it was audited by the post office in November 2000. The building has since been converted into a residential property. The post office counter was transferred to another shop in the village, which closed in 2022.
The Norfolk Council has defended plans to hike car park charges at some of the county's busiest beaches and seaside towns amid fears it will harm tourism. North Norfolk District Council is putting up fees at places like Cromer, Sheringham, Wells Next at Sea, to generate more than £150,000 in extra income. Before agreeing the changes at a meeting this week, more than half the people responding to a survey about the plan said they worried it would put people off visiting and harm local businesses. But Lucy Shires, Cabinet Member for Finance at the Liberal Democrat-controlled authority, said the increases were fair and will help support maintaining other facilities, such as Cromer Pier and public toilets. She said, "It is reasonable that those who use and benefit from our tourist infrastructure contribute towards its upkeep. This was not about penalising visitors. It's about ensuring sustainability. At the same time, we remain mindful that tourism underpins many local livelihoods and our pricing remains extremely competitive with neighbouring authorities and comparable coastal destinations. This order seeks to strike that balance, supporting tourism whilst protecting local taxpayers and ensuring that our car parks remain safe, maintained and financially sustainable. The new fees will mean hourly charges in some car parks on the coast would rise from £2.10 to £2.20 an hour. While beaches and seaside towns will be more expensive to park at, inland market towns like Fakenham and Stalham will not see any parking increases. The council said it did not want to raise them there because it could put people off visiting the high streets. The changes will affect the following car parks: Cromer, Runton Road East Runton, Beach Road Haysborough, Cart Gap Backton, Coast Road Overstrand, Paul's Lane Sea Pauling, Clink Road Sheringham, East Cliff and Chequers Wells, Steerman's Yard Weybourne, East Cliff and Chequers Wells, Steerman's Yard Weybourne Beach Road. The new measures also cause commotion over fears of eating in car parks, with concerns that day trippers would end up being fined £50 for eating fish and chips in them or a flask of tea. North Norfolk District Council has brought in new measures to stop parking bays being used for eating. Initially, the policy said, "No person shall use any part of a parking place or any vehicle left in a parking place for A, sleeping or camping purposes, B, for eating or cooking purposes." The wording sparked concerns that visitors would be banned from eating fish and chips or even enjoying a biscuit with a flask of tea inside their own cars. After dozens of people raised their fears in a consultation survey about the policy, the council was forced to clarify the restrictions and change the wording. It has made clear that people will still be able to eat in their own cars, although they must not use extra parking bays for picnics or barbecues. The purpose of the restriction is to prevent parking spaces from being used for cooking activities like barbecues or picnic places. These provisions are not unusual. They are standard in parking orders across the country and exist to ensure car parks remain safe, accessible, and appropriately used. Following consultation, we have clarified the wording to remove any ambiguity. The policy now says, No person shall use any part of a parking place, A, for sleeping or camping purposes, B, for eating or cooking purposes. It means people will not be able to set out a table and chairs for a picnic in the same space next to their car, for example. But having a picnic or a portion of fish and chips inside the vehicle will not risk facing the wrath of council inspectors.
An unassuming market town in Norfolk became the centre of an international news story when a disgraced former royal found himself there. Andrew Mountbatten Windsor was arrested at the Sandringham estate at 8 a.m. last Thursday on suspicion of misconduct in public office. As a result, he spent much of his 66th birthday in Aylsham. Aylsham Police Investigation Centre, that is. He was held in police custody for 11 hours, with police refusing to reveal which station he was being detained in until he was snapped, leaving Aylsham Police Investigation Centre at around 7 p.m. Aylsham, A-L-Y-L-E-S-H-A-M, as Sky News called it, became the centre of the world's media when the former prince was hurriedly rushed out. A look at Google search data highlights the different ways the world attempted to spell the name of the town. Aylsham, with an E, was the most common spelling, while Elsham, E-L-S-H-A-M, was another interesting effort. When asked why Andrew was taken to Aylsham, despite King's Lynn Police Investigation Centre being much closer to Sandringham, Norfolk Constabulary refused to comment. Andrew remains under investigation by Thames Valley Police following his release. King Charles, Andrew's own brother, said the law must take its course in relation to the arrest. His statement was also supported by Kate and William, the Prince and Princess of Wales, who are understood to have been staying nearby at Anmer Hall on the Norfolk estate at the time of the arrest. The royals continued as normal on Thursday despite the seismic news. Princess Anne, somewhat ironically, was visiting a prison in Leeds, while King Charles and Queen Camilla hosted audiences at St James Palace before Charles spent the afternoon at London Fashion Week. At around 9:30 p.m, Andrew eventually returned to the King's Sandringham estate, where he is living at Wood Farm. Searches of the property have concluded, while raids continue on his former Windsor home. Officers remain stationed outside of Wood Farm at the end of last week. On Tuesday, Lord Mandelson was arrested. The 72-year-old former Labour minister, peer and UK ambassador to the United States, was arrested on suspicion of misconduct in public office. It comes after allegations he sent confidential documents to Jeffrey Epstein while in government.
A restaurant has been left reeling after nearly £1,000 in tips was stolen from its site. Curbside Kitchen said a couple entered its Cromer eatery and helped themselves to the cash, taking approximately £850 to £900. Officials at Norfolk Constabulary have confirmed that an investigation into the incident on February 14th is underway, with officers sent out to speak to the business earlier this week. That box wasn't spare change, a spokesman for Curbside Kitchen said. It contained the hard-earned tips our team receives for their customer service, long hours and dedication to giving guests the best experience possible. To see that hard work taken in a moment is honestly stomach-turning. We're a small business and our team is like family. Those tips meant a lot to them.
An investigation is underway into the death of a man following his contact with asbestos. David Cully of Church Street, Sheringham, died at the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital on August the 14th last year. An inquest into the 77-year-old's death opened at Norfolk Coroner's Court heard the retired drain servicer died from bronchopneumonia. Two contributing conditions were listed as asbestos-related fibrosis and ischemic heart disease. A full inquest is due to take place at the court on March 13th. The Coroner's Court Support Service helps bereaved families and witnesses attending Norfolk Coroner's Court. If you are a bereaved family member or a witness, please get in touch by calling 0300 111 2141 or emailing helpline@ccss.org.uk.
A lifeboat volunteer with decades of service has been honoured for his commitment to saving lives at sea. Gordon Nichols of Cromer RNLI has received his 30-year long service medal that has marked nearly 35 years of dedication to the station. Mr. Nichols began volunteering in 1990 after spending weekends crab fishing with Billy and Bob Davis, who both served at Cromer RNLI. Mr. Nichols said, "Volunteering with Cromer RNLI has been a huge part of my life for many years, and it's something I'm incredibly proud of. You don't do it on your own, though. When the pager goes off, it's not just the crew who are affected, it's your family as well. I've only been able to give the time I have because of the constant support and understanding of my family, and I'm very grateful to them, as well as to everyone at the station for being part of such a dedicated and supportive team." During his long service, Mr. Nichols has contributed to numerous life-saving missions and has served as both a crew member and mechanic. He featured on the BBC's Saving Lives at Sea in 2025 for his part in the rescue of a man and his dog who had entered the sea from Cromer Promenade. John Redman, lifeboat operations manager, said, "Gordon is one of those volunteers who just quietly gets on with the job and makes an enormous difference. His knowledge, reliability, and commitment over so many years have been invaluable to the station. This recognition is thoroughly deserved, and we're incredibly grateful for everything he has given to Cromer RNLI. Everyone at the station extended their thanks and congratulations to Mr. Nichols for his outstanding service and dedication."
Our next few news stories include burst water main, custody warning for sex offender, new supermarket plans, driver fled scene of crash, death from asbestos-related cancer, Dyson campus plans for Gresham, Broads boaters fines, and widower dies after fall.
A burst water main was disrupting the supply to homes and businesses this week in a Norfolk town. According to the Anglian Water website, people in and around Stalham were dealing with very low pressure. "This is being caused by a burst water main in your area," it explained. Supply was expected to be restored by 4 p.m. on Tuesday. "Our team on the ground is working as fast as they can," the spokesman said. Updates were to be shared to the Anglian Water website.
A man who admitted attempting to communicate sexually with a teenage girl has been warned custody is highly likely. Andrew Collins was charged with attempting to cause or incite a child to engage in sexual activity. The 63-year-old was also accused of attempting to cause a child to watch sexual activity and attempting to engage in sexual activity with a child. Collins of Mill Road Cell House appeared at Norwich Crown Court on Monday, February 23rd, when he pleaded guilty to all three offences, which happened between June 12th and October 30th, 2024. It is understood the 14-year-old girl Collins communicated with was in fact an adult decoy from a paedophile hunter group. The case was adjourned until April 28th for the preparation of a pre-sentence report to consider future risk and dangerousness. Judge Alice Robinson warned Collins immediate custody was highly likely.
A new Lidl store could be opening in Norfolk. The discount supermarket chain has revealed it wants to open a multi-million pound branch in Elsham. It would be located between Henry Page Road, Norwich Road and Hungate Lane and create up to 40 jobs. The store would include an in-store bakery, the middle of Lidl aisle and customer parking with 12 electric vehicle charging points, covered cycle parking and designated accessible and parent and child spaces. Vehicular access is proposed from Henry Page Road with pedestrian and cycle links to support active travel. Before formally lodging plans with Broadland District Council, the firm is opening a public drop-in consultation. It will take place at Aylsham Town Hall between 4 and 7pm on Tuesday, March the 10th. Feedback can also be given online. Andrew Hodkinson, Regional Head of Property at Lidl GB, said, "We are pleased to reveal our plans to deliver a much-needed discount supermarket to Aylsham. This would create high-quality jobs for local people and greatly improve local shopping choice. We have worked carefully to shape plans that respond to the site's surroundings, including proposals for landscaping and biodiversity enhancements. We encourage residents to have their say at our drop-in event via our feedback form or the website."
Police were called to Angel Court in Cromer Road, North Walsham, just after 10pm on February the 19th. They had received reports that a car had collided with a parked ambulance, causing significant damage. Nobody was injured. The driver failed to stop, and officers are now trying to locate them. Anyone with information should contact Norfolk Constabulary by calling 101 or emailing david.mills@norfolk.police.uk.
A woman who died from an asbestos-related cancer was exposed to the deadly fibres as a young child while hugging her father after his shifts at a factory, an inquest heard. Elaine Ellery, 67, died from malignant mesothelioma caused by asbestos exposure decades earlier in her childhood. Mrs. Ellery, a retired personnel assistant, had no known exposure to the material during her working life, but she was unknowingly exposed to it while growing up through contact with her father and visits to his workplace. An inquest recently held at Norfolk Coroner's Court heard she died at Priscilla Bacon Lodge Hospice on August the 6th, 2025. Area Coroner Joanna Thompson Inset concluded her death was the result of an industrial disease, telling the hearing she died from exposure to asbestos as a child. In a statement given before her death, Mrs. Ellery, who was born in Bedfordshire, described her childhood. Her father worked as an unskilled labourer at a factory from 1949 until he was made redundant in 1974. She recalled how he would return home during the day, still wearing his work clothes. "When I attended junior school in those days, we came home at lunchtime," she said. "My father also came home from work at lunchtime, and we all had a meal together. When he came home at lunchtime, he was in his work clothes, because he didn't have time to change. I did not pay much attention to his overalls, but I remember that he just wore his own clothes to work, which were suitable for labouring duties. I was very close to my dad, and as soon as he came home, I would go up to him and hug him. I was still very young, and it was exciting when my father came home." She also remembered embracing him when he returned in the evenings, unaware that his clothing may have carried dangerous asbestos fibres. Her exposure may also have come from helping her mother wash his contaminated work clothes. "My mother did all of the clothes washing in a twin tub and hung them on the line outside, and I used to help her regularly," she said. "I would help my mother load the clothes into the wash basket, including my father's work clothes." Mrs. Ellery of Priory Close Bacton also visited the factory as a child from the age of 8 to 14 for an annual Christmas party. She said, "I was always excited to go there because there was a substance which looked like snow on the ground. It wasn't snow, but had a similar appearance, and in hindsight I believe it must have been asbestos on the ground from the factory's operations. Her family had already suffered the devastating consequences of asbestos exposure. Her father was diagnosed with cancer in 1982 and died the following year. A coroner ruled his death was caused by industrial disease resulting from asbestos exposure. She added that her mother was always fearful that asbestos was harmful and that my father would be affected by it, describing it as her mother's worst fear. Mrs. Ellery said she was absolutely floored and devastated when she herself was diagnosed with mesothelioma in October 2024, having already witnessed her father's illness and deaths. Mesothelioma is an aggressive cancer linked almost exclusively to asbestos exposure, often developing decades after contact with the fibres. Mrs. Elliott retired in April 2019, having worked for many years as a personnel assistant. Her work history revealed no occupational exposure to asbestos. Summing up, Ms. Thompson said the evidence clearly showed Mrs. Ellery's fatal illness resulted from environmental exposure in childhood. Offering her condolences to the family, she said, "I would like to offer my most sincere condolences. I am so sorry for your loss." The conclusion of industrial disease formally recognised that Mrs. Ellery's death was caused by asbestos exposure many years early, likely occurred during greeting her father returning home from work.
Construction work is underway to build a new prep school at Gresham's in Holt, which has been supported by £40 million investment from alumnus Sir James Dyson. Gresham's is working alongside Pentaco Construction Limited, the project's main contractor, to relocate its current prep school to the new Dyson campus, formerly the Holt Hall Outdoor Learning Centre. Opening in September 2027, the Dyson campus will be a state-of-the-art education facility for boys and girls aged 7 to 13, located within 86 acres of woodland and lakes. Andrew Grady, Managing Director at Pentaco Construction, said, "We are incredibly proud to have been appointed to deliver this exceptional design and build project, which brings together the best of both worlds. An ultra-modern educational facility alongside the careful conservation of the much-loved historic Holt Hall. This project represents not only a significant investment in the future of the site, but also a sensitive respect for its past. Restorative work is currently taking place on the Grade 2 listed Victorian Hall, alongside groundworks for the new mirrored extension and landscaping. Gresham's is working with several local contractors to deliver the project." Douglas Robb, headmaster of Gresham's, added, "We are excited to get construction underway at the new prep school. There's a wealth of skill, engineering and ingenuity in the region, and partnering with local contractors reflects our ongoing commitment to Norfolk and ensuring this major investment benefits the region as a whole. Sir James Dyson is enabling us to deliver a campus that is not only academically ambitious, but also inspiring and innovative."
Boaters in the Broads have been hit with fines totalling £41,000 for not registering vessels and paying to use the waterways amid a rise in cases. Broads authority officials have taken 35 people to court in the past 4 weeks and have successfully prosecuted people for 50 offences related to not paying toll fees. Anyone using the Broads, be it by paddleboard, a motor cruiser or sailing boat, must pay the charge. But this past year there has been a significant rise in cases of people avoiding paying it. A spokesman for the Broads Authority said, "Late payment of tolls causes lots of extra work and costs for the authority, requiring robust action to chase those that refuse to pay. Prosecution is the last resort once all other avenues have failed to secure payment. Unfortunately, this year there has been a significant rise in cases submitted for prosecution. Over the last 4 weeks, 35 people have been successfully prosecuted for 50 offences involving unregistered boats and unpaid tolls, with over £41,000 awarded in fines, victim surcharges, costs and compensation. The Broads Authority urges anyone having difficulty paying contact the tolls team at the earliest opportunity.
An 89-year-old man who fell while taking the rubbish out at his home died on Christmas Eve, an inquest heard. Ronald Gray of Highfield, Field Dorling, near Holt, had gone into the garden at his home on the morning of December the 20th last year when he lost his footing and fell. His daughter, Lorraine Gray, who lived with him, said she'd been getting ready when she heard a bang outside shortly before 11 a.m. Speaking to an officer from Norfolk's Coronary Court, she said, "It looked like he'd gone out to a bin to put something in it and lost his balance as he stepped off the pavement. He'd fallen backwards onto the concrete path." A neighbour came to help and an ambulance was called, but Mr. Gray was left waiting outside for about an hour on the cold December day before he was taken to the Norfolk and Norwich Hospital. An inquest at the court heard Mr. Gray, who had been born on April the 10th, 1936, in Field Dorling, had been relatively well and active for his age. A widower, he'd worked as a cleansing operative before his retirement. After being taken to hospital, he was found to have suffered a fractured hip. However, surgery was delayed after doctors identified a serious heart condition. The procedure, which should normally take place within 48 hours, was carried out on December the 23rd, and by this time he was considered a high-risk patient. Area coroner Joanna Thompson said Mr. Gray suffered a heart attack soon after arriving at hospital and had to be medically optimised for surgery, but he did not recover afterwards and was placed on palliative care. He died on December the 24th. His medical cause of death was given as a heart attack and fractured neck of femur, with underlying ischemic heart disease and atrial fibrillation. Miss Thompson recorded a conclusion of natural causes contributed by an accidental fall. Mr. Gray was the widower of Eileen Gray, a former local government officer. You are listening to edition number 2006 of The Mardler, recorded on Friday, the 27th of February, 2026. Still to come, there are items about a garden centre fire, speeding drivers and hedgehogs waking soon, and of course the Mardler magazine supplement. But before all that, letters to the editor of the North Norfolk News.
Staff really stepped up. At last, the defunct Boots Pharmacy in Station Road, Sheringham, has reopened with new owners, Allied Pharmacies. Calling in on Saturday, I noted the shelves are stocked and it's ready for business. That said, a vote of thanks to Boots Chemist and their staff for stepping up to the plate and doing a grand job of filling the town's pharmacy gap. Their small shop was often packed out, but there was never a long wait, and the service was less than brilliant. And that was written by Paul Milner of Sheringham. And now this week's obituaries.
Sandra Annis of Stalham died peacefully at home on February 2nd, 2026, aged 75 years. Reunited with her husband Jim, loving mum of James, Juliet and Jason, mother-in-law of Ali and Charlie, dearly loved nanny of Dominic, Natasha, Cara, Maddie, Cora and Danielle. Great nanny of Ella Rose, Oscar and Sienna, a much-missed sister of Denise, Wendy and Marcus, The funeral service will be held at Stalham Baptist Church on Friday, March 20th at 11 a.m. Family flowers only. Donations in aid of the East Anglian Air Ambulance may be given at the service or using sandraannis.muchloved.com.
And now some local events. On Tuesday, the 3rd of March, Western Front Association at 7:15 p.m. A talk by Major Phil Watson on the 12th Lancers, From Horse to Horsepower, The White Horse, The Street, Trouse, Norwich. Email bob.kerry@btopenworld.com. Telephone 01508 558674. On Wednesday, the 4th of March, Norwich University of the Arts MA Fine Art and Textile Interim Exhibition at 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily to March the 9th, 4th of March to the 9th of March, St Mary's Works, St Mary's Plain, Norwich. Email liz@maw.coms.co.uk, telephone 07834 383 112. And The Psychology of Serial Killers at 6:30 p.m, £5. North Walsham Library presents an evening of true crime with former DCI Steve Gaskin. Find out what a serial killer is and why serial killers commit offences. A truly fascinating talk. North Walsham Library, New Road, North Walsham. Email north.walsham.lib@libraries.norfolk.gov.uk. Telephone 01692 402 482.
Norfolk Contemporary Art Society at 7 p.m. Price £10, members £7, students free. www.n-cas.org.uk. Paula MacArthur gives a talk. The artist's crystal paintings find fantastical moments in the real world. Wine and soft drinks will be available after the talk. Free parking. Blake Studio, 71A, The Close, Norwich. liz@morecoms.co.uk. Telephone 0783 438 3112. Norwich School Choral Society and Norwich Baroque at 7:30 p.m, price £15, free to under 25s, available through www.ticketsource.co.uk/Norwich School and on the door. Choral concert featuring Goodale's Eternal Light, Enola Daly's setting of words from the Song of Solomon, Upon Your Heart, and Edgar Baton's And I Saw a New Heaven, featuring Melissa Hawkins performing Mozart's Horn Concerto No. 3 in E-flat, the Cathedral of St John the Baptist, Unthank Road, Norwich. Ross Noble at 8 p.m, King's Lynn, Corn Exchange. Thursday, the 5th of March, pop-up shops at 10 o'clock to 4 p.m. daily between the 5th of March and the 8th of March. North Norfolk Shopping, that's not on the high street, from local producers and artisans. Dale Gate Market will host 4 artisans and producers in the beach huts each week. Dalegate Market, Main Road, Burnham Deepdale. Inquiries at dalegatemarket.co.uk. Telephone 0148 521 0305. Last but not least, it's Just Ska Rock Band at 8 p.m. a free live music event, original ska rock band, an emerging artist showcase. The Nelson, 122 Nelson Street, Norwich. max_jam@hotmail.co.uk. Telephone 07790656074.
We turn now to this week's Mardler magazine supplement, where we hear about record-breaking number of archaeological treasures discovered, the village that time forgot, how the once extinct goshawk is returning to Norfolk, and 100 oaks mark Norfolk Wildlife Trust centenary.
Record-breaking number of archaeological treasure discovered, by Jenny Garnsworthy, Norfolk Magazine. A record-breaking number of archaeological finds and treasure were discovered in Britain in 2024, in large part thanks to the metal detectorists who are responsible for the vast majority. The figures released by the British Museum show that over the past 3 years there have been significant increases in the number of finds reported by the public, accounting for 94%. Metal detecting has surged in popularity in recent years, and the museum said the finds demonstrate the vital contribution made by members of the public to documenting and preserving the nation's history. Among the discoveries was a hoard of 179 silver pennies, likely buried on the eve of the Battle of Hastings in 1066. Roman vehicle fittings, AD 43 to 200, found by a detectorist in Essex. Another item was a complete copper alloy Roman vehicle fitting, found by a detectorist in Essex. Thought to date from about AD 43 to 200, it was likely attached to the body of a carriage or wagon, or to the yoke which hitched draft animals to the vehicle. The latest annual figures for the Portable Antiquities Scheme show there were 79,616 finds recorded in 2024. This was up from 74,506 in 2023 and 53,490 in 2022. Meanwhile, 1,540 treasure cases were reported in England, Wales and Northern Ireland during 2024, the highest number recorded in a single year. The figure for 2023 was 1,377. The counties recording the most PAS finds were Norfolk, 7,120, Suffolk, 5,410, Lincolnshire, 5,133, and Gloucestershire, 5,034, all agricultural counties known to have a rich archaeological heritage. During the same period, Norfolk, 138, Hampshire, 110, and North Yorkshire, 109, recorded the highest numbers of treasure finds. More than 92% of objects were recovered from cultivated land, where archaeological material is especially vulnerable to agricultural damage. Another find was an assemblage of early medieval precious metal objects found by detectorists in plough soil in Wiltshire, thought to form part of a high-status burial. The find includes a silver, gold and garnet bird's head terminal with elephant ivory inlays, possibly from a drinking horn, several gold rings and other metal objects. A follow-up excavation will be led by Cardiff University and the PAS. A spokesman for British Museums said these record-breaking figures are due in part to metal detectorists, who account for 94% of recorded finds and demonstrate the vital contribution made by members of the public to documenting and preserving the nation's history. Dr. Nicholas Cullinan, director of the British Museum, said the British Museum is proud of its own role in managing the portable antiquities scheme and the treasure process. Together, they are vital tools for preserving and recording Britain's past, ensuring that remarkable discoveries made by the public are protected, studied, and made accessible to everyone. Ian Richardson, acting head of portable antiquities and treasure at the British Museum, said the continued rise in the number of funds reported through the Portable Antiquities Scheme is a testament to the dedication of finders across the country. Their responsible reporting allows us to build a richer and more detailed picture of life in the past, while ensuring that important objects are preserved for public benefit. Culture Minister Baroness Twycross said, "Treasure gives us unique insights into the world around us and helps to shape our national story. Discoveries provide us with a wealth of knowledge, improving our understanding of our history in greater detail."
The Village That Time Forgot, North Norfolk Living magazine. When I first drove through Melton Constable, I realised I was somewhere very unusual. The houses weren't made of picturesque Norfolk flint, front doors facing away from the wind blowing off the North Sea. I was instead surrounded by tiny industrial brick terraces. Vast railway buildings lurked down back lanes, entirely derelict. It seemed to have been built in the middle of nowhere. An entire community, I would soon discover, had been created to serve an enormous railway hub called the Works. It was a forgotten railway village, and I was completely drawn in by it. I stopped the car and looked at the houses, overgrown allotments, boarded up Victorian railway workshops, and was astonished to find a brightly painted church made of corrugated iron that I later learned was known as the Tin Church of Borough Parva. As I drove away, I realised the distant hedge boundary marked what had once been a railway line. All writers need a stroke of luck, and mine was to meet an old lady called Phyllis Youngman, who welcomed me into her house on the outer edge of Melton Constable. She was confined to her chair, but had appointed herself the fierce keeper of village memory. The Works had shut down in the 1930s, and when the railway closures followed in the 50s and 60s, she began to collect photographs, diaries, documents, and even kept old railway carriages plus an entire ticket office in her garden. Over tea and biscuits once a week, she shared her collection with me and wanted the story of the village to be told. One evening, she invited descendants of railway families round to share their memories too. Melton Constable. I renamed it Swanton Stoke, scrolled back to 1900 to 1901 and invented a superintendent, a manager, upholsterers, trimmers, clerks, coal shovelers, engine drivers, a gang of boys, and got the trains running again. The sitter is filled with the optimism of the new century and foreshadows the enormous social changes about to occur between the classes and sexes. The story follows the life of young baker's boy Jack Stamp, who develops a crush on Rosie, a beautiful newcomer who steps off the train one evening, bringing with her a mysterious past. Through her eyes, the reader sees the village as it was over a century ago. Night after night, she was woken by the noise from the works and the comings and goings of the trains. The village lived by the trains. There was no need for clocks or timepieces. As the darkness of winter deepened, the gas lamp glowed longer and she became accustomed to the sound of men scraping and clanging, the blow of whistles, the hissing of steam, the roar of the engines. Jack, in turn, describes the hierarchy built into the very streets of a village governed by the coming and going of trains, the rhythm of Bible readings and bread making. On this side of the village, we have to make do with lamps and water from the pump at the end of the road. We're called the privates because the houses weren't built by the railway company, but by the landlords who rent them to us. Billy lives on the other side of the main road in a house built by the railway company with water and gas laid on, so he doesn't have to fetch water. The railway company takes their rent off the men's wages. Echoes of Melton Constable are palpable. Today, Melton Constable's works is bricked up and the railways have gone, but the houses remain, and Phyllis Youngman, who has since died, would be pleased to know that the community is finally coming together to celebrate its railway heritage. The Friends of Briston and Borough Parva Churches have won a £23,500 grant from Historic England as part of the Everyday Heritage Grant Project to celebrate working class history. We've started lots of groups, says Shannon Howell Fuller, Community Engagement Manager for the Friends. A history group, a photography group, a group gathering railway memories from older residents, and an embroidery group producing a work by the artist John Jackson. A history website, funded by Historic England, is already up and running. Melton-Constable-History.co.uk, and stories from the past are coming in. Some residents have hung on to old railway lamps, station masters' uniforms and railway signs, which will be exhibited at a festival in May 2026 to bring together all the work they've been doing. Shannon says there will be talks, guided walks and a 360-degree animation of the station as it once was.
How the Once Extinct Goshawk is Returning to Norfolk by Connor Mark Jameson, Norfolk Magazine. I've always been intrigued by the goshawk and how this most dashing and seen close imperious of birds gets so little attention compared to others. I think it's partly because the bird is so rare, but also because, where it does exist, it is so darned hard to see and identify. It has hard-earned its other name, the Phantom of the Forest. The exciting news is the goshawk seems to be coming back. I came across a copy of a book called Birds of Norfolk by M.J. Seago, published in 1967. In the short entry for the goshawk, the author says that the species has been recorded in the county just half a dozen times in the past half century. These were vagrant birds likely to be passing through from elsewhere in Europe. The last of these records was one that turned up in North Wootton's woods on the fringes of King's Lynn in August 1956, close to where I now live. Seago was writing at a time when the goshawk was extinct as a breeding species in the British Isles. A few years later, the birds started to breed again. When Seago updated his book in 1977, he reported a further 17 instances of goshawk in Norfolk, sadly including three shot, but also a pair that had spent the summer in Breckland. The female, it was noted, had a falconer's bell on her leg. It was a start of the recolonisation of local woods by birds that had escaped from captivity or been released on purpose. Goshawks are around the size of buzzards, but much less inclined to hang around in the open, whether perched or flying. They go under the radar. The female is much bigger than her mate, and they nest usually in undisturbed places in mature woodland. They lay 3 to 5 eggs and hunt for a wide range of prey. They are particularly fond of and adept at catching grey squirrels, which endears them to anyone tasked with managing trees. They also catch crows of all kinds, including jays and magpies, pigeons, rabbits, rats, gulls, and even other birds of prey. New technology is helping us to understand how the birds live and what happens to them when the young hawks fledge from the nest and go out to find their way in the world. The British Trust for Ornithology, BTO, itself based near Thetford Forest, decided to investigate the mysterious raptor, Literally nothing is known locally about the species' use of habitats, daily movements or home range size, they said at the outset of their recent studies. It was time to shed some daylight on magic. BTO staff have been fitting small tracking devices to young hawks and have had some eye-opening results. Most of the young birds stay fairly close to home, but some are more adventurous. One young female explored the whole of East Anglia, and another took up residence at Sandringham, which is unsurprising as the extensive mature coniferous woodland there and the huge flocks of wood pigeons it attracts make it an obvious place for a hawk to settle. Adding to the intrigue, there are increasing reports of goshawks elsewhere in the county. The fabled phantom of the forest seems to be making a comeback, helped by the new era of rewilding and increased understanding of the value of all elements in the food web. It has been observed in some places that the return of goshawks can boost the numbers of smaller birds due to what's known as the halo effect, of top predators discouraging the presence of general nest predators like crows and squirrels. I have been lucky enough to work in a woodland environment for over 30 years, and now I hear and occasionally see goshawks, says Fraser Bradbury of the Westacre Estate. They are an important ally in the work we do to restore ecosystems. These are exciting times in Norfolk, with so many projects up and running. The return of the goshawk is very much a part of that. It's a species that can help to restore some of the balances. Many species viewed as pests have boomed in their absence. Projects such as ours, Massingham, Wild Ken Hill and others across Norfolk, East Anglia and beyond offer this opportunity at a landscape scale. Adding to the intrigue, goshawks have even taken to living in cities just across the North Sea from us in continental Europe. One thing is clear, the goshawk can turn up anywhere. If you think you've seen a phantom, don't be shy. People may just start to believe you. Connor's book, Looking for the Goshawk, is published by Bloomsbury.
A 100 Centenary Oaks Mark Norfolk Wildlife Trust Centenary by Nick Archerson, Norfolk Magazine. Every couple of months, I visit Berwick House, Norfolk Wildlife Trust's handsome Victorian headquarters on Thorpe Road, opposite Norwich Railway Station. I always go by bus. This means a 26-minute walk from my village to the nearest town, then an hour and 20 minutes on the bus before walking to the office. I catch the bus at 6:20 in the morning or the one at just after 7. I love it. Not because I'm a bus aficionado, mind, far from it, but for the freedom it bestows to watch, to listen, and to think. In the bus, my mind can roam across the landscape, asking questions of the fields, the cottages, and the trees. Yes, most of all the trees. Always lovable. Trees are at their easiest to love in winter. From the early morning bus, I see the sunrise interpreted by trees. Winter naked, they reveal the secrets of their trunks and limbs against the gold arrival of the day. Oaks are the most numerous standard trees in hedges between fields. Their trunks are thick and deeply creased, but it is their branches that enchant me. Their lowest, heaviest boughs are crookedly horizontal, as though yearning to stretch across the fields. Above them, the next layer of branches reaches slightly upwards, the angle growing steeper towards the crown. Every branch is thickly clad with brittle twigs. These are clustered near the tips, forming bristling hands, worthy of a villain in a fairy tale. There are birches on my journey too, where long gone ice sheets have left beds of sand. A birch is the antithesis of an oak. A birch's trunk is slim and vertical. Its branches are often almost vertical too. Quite unlike an oak's, its twigs are fine and springy, pulled downwards by their own small weight. Against the daybreak winter sun, they make a delicate filigree that is utterly distinctive from the bus. Alders grow along the river and in muddy meadows. Their trunks are slim and straight, like birches, and their horizontal boughs are slight. However, having held their seed cones from last summer, alders look dense and black, and somehow menacing. Near them, along a stretch of river, loved by swans, crack willows grow. A crack willow is a slow-mo Sisyphus. Its broad, splay trunks reach hopefully from the riverbank to the sun, but they are doomed to fall. Too heavy for itself, each bough will split, collapsing, still attached, towards the mud below, twisting the tree into a tortured living sculpture. Monument to its frustrated dream to stroke the sky, a crack willow is beautiful. All these trees and others, ashes, hornbeams, cherries, charm me through the steamed-up window of my bus. Even once I reach the city, there are many trees. I walk to the river by the cathedral. Beeches and birches crowd around the Duke of Wellington, and a strawberry tree peeks across the flint wall by the dark entry to the cloister. In the tiny car park behind Berwick House, there's a hedge of small-leaved elms, tangled and corky-barked and unmistakable. Trees add time to landscape too. Not long ago, I visited the farmyard where my beloved grandmother grew up in the 1920s. Seeing an oak around 200 years of age, I placed my hand on it, knowing that my wayward grandmother, always outdoors, always on some adventure, probably climbed it as a girl and certainly chased her sister round it. Across a century, we were united by an oak. Yet we rarely notice trees and almost never thank them. Most of us, that is. A couple of years ago, thinking ahead to Norfolk Wildlife Trust centenary in 2026, I quipped to our president, Patrick Barkham, how wonderful it would be to plant 100 centenary oaks grown from acorns collected in our ancient woods. Quietly, lovingly, with no fuss nor need for recognition, Patrick gathered countless acorns from Foxley Wood and planted them. 2 years later, he has a forest of seedling oaks, each from an ancient Foxley parent. They will be planted over this centenary year in a park or at a school or an NWT reserve. And they will grow as living memorials to 100 years of action for nature in our county. Who knows what public transport will look like a century from now? Who knows whether paper magazines will still be published? But I dare to hope that in 100 years, a nature correspondent writing for Norfolk Magazine will look through the steamed-up window of an electric bus and see a strong young oak grown from seed by Patrick. Planted in 2026, seeing its round and rugged trunk, its leafless winter boughs, its jugged hands that may perhaps be moved to write about the constancy of trees, their beauty, how they give us hope. Perhaps for its 200th anniversary, Norfolk Wildlife Trust may once again be planting trees, preserving nature from the distant past, gifting it to the future, for this is what we do.
And those items conclude this week's magazine supplement. Our thanks go to the authors of these articles for their contributions.
Returning to the news, our penultimate selection of articles include Bank Worker Theft, National Trust Cafe Temporary Closure, Hedgehogs Waking Soon, Speeding Drivers, Assaults Against Women, Garden Centre Fire, Best Beach Award, and Wells Cottage sold for 10 times guide price.
A bank worker who siphoned more than £4,000 from the accounts of vulnerable and elderly customers has been told she should be thoroughly ashamed of herself, but spared jail. Melissa Borrett, 54, took the money from TSB bank accounts belonging to elderly and vulnerable customers between March and August 2023. Norwich Crown Court heard Borrett, who had worked at the Aylsham branch of the bank for 2 decades, deliberately targeted elderly and vulnerable victims. She took a total of £4,110 from at least 4 customers, accessing their accounts while they were not present in the branch. Daniel O'Donovan, prosecuting, said the bank was contacted by the son of one victim who noticed large sums of cash having been taken from her account. An investigation was carried out and Borrett was found to have been responsible. The investigation found a similar fraudulent transactions had been made against other customers, again when they were not in the branch. Borrett was suspended, and police were informed of what had happened, resulting in her being charged with fraud. Miss O'Donovan said the bank has reimbursed everyone who lost out as a result of Borrett's offending. Borrett of Emery Close, Sheringham, appeared at court this week, having admitted fraud by abuse of position. Before she was sentenced, the court heard an impact statement from the son of one of the victims who had suffered from dementia but has since died. He said they thought we were going out of our minds and said the fraud has caused a huge amount of distress and still does to this day. Judge Andrew Shaw said Borrett had committed the most egregious breach of trust as an employee of a respected bank against elderly and vulnerable customers. You abolished a position of trust and responsibility, and I'm quite sure you deliberately targeted elderly and vulnerable victims in a belief that you would be more likely to get away with it, he said. Imposing a 9-month prison term suspended for 2 years, Judge Shaw said Borrett should be thoroughly ashamed. Laurie Targa, mitigating, said Borrett, who has no previous convictions, accepted she was a trusted member of staff who had taken from vulnerable people's accounts. Miss Tucker said it was an aberration, which Borrett, who has mental health issues, still struggles to explain. She still struggles to explain why, after many years of trustworthy behaviour, she engaged in this behaviour. Borrett was also ordered to carry out up to 20 rehabilitation activity required days and 200 hours unpaid work.
A cafe at a National Trust site has closed for 3 weeks. The Muddy Boots Cafe at the Blickling Estate near Aylsham is closed to undergo a series of much-needed upgrades. This was announced in a Facebook post which said, "We're creating a clearer, more intuitive route through the cafe and a more welcoming dining space for everyone." Improvements will include a wider entrance door at the rear of the estate barn to improve access for wheelchairs and prams, which will become the main cafe entrance. A new system to remove double queuing and ease pressure at the till will also be created. Fresh redecoration, which keeps with the building's history, and new hygienic countertops in the kitchen will be installed. Visitors to the historic hall will be able to enjoy coffee and cakes at the dog-friendly Stables Cafe and the Cafe Trailer, located by the estate barn. Muddy Boots will be open again on March 17th.
Hedgehogs will soon be waking from their winter slumbers as warmer weather finally arrives across the region. But experts say give them a wide berth as they begin foraging in our gardens for food. The prickly creatures usually come out of hibernation in mid-March and April, and while many gardeners and their children are fascinated by these spiky mammals, they shouldn't attempt to pick them up, says Helen Baskowska, conservation research and evidence manager at Norfolk Wildlife Trust. It's pretty warm at the minute and they might come out, toddle around for a few days and then, if there's a really cold snap, go back to sleep for a few days. Not into a deep hibernation, but this time of year can be variable, she said. I would never advise people to pick them up and handle them or do anything with them unless they are obviously injured or trapped, she says. Don't encourage them in the house and don't pick them up just because you can. It really stresses them out and it will frighten them away and they may seek another refuge somewhere else. They are much happier left to live their natural lives and are very good at finding what they need as long as we don't mess about with them. Hedgehogs don't really like people. If you pick them up, they can get stressed. If you handle them, you can wake them up more than they are awake already. She added, while people can feed them, but leaving wild corners of our gardens to encourage the invertebrates, they feed on its more... She added, while people can feed them, but leaving wild corners of our gardens to encourage the invertebrates they feed on is more important. The British Hedgehog Preservation Society, BHPS, says you can supplement their natural food with a good quality meaty hedgehog food, meaty cat or dog food, chicken meat is the first ingredient listed, or dry biscuits for cats. Feeding stations can be made from plastic boxes with a lid and a hole too small for cats to enter. If you see an injured hedgehog, the BHPS recommends using gardening gloves or a folded towel to collect it up, bring it indoors and put it in a high-sided box with an old towel or fleece in the bottom for the hedgehog to hide under before contacting the RSPCA or a local animal sanctuary.
Drivers were caught speeding in a Norfolk Village hotspot by the police after locals raised concerns. Brougham police conducted speed checks in Wroxham in a location villagers had noted was a problem area for speeders. Officers stopped three people, which included two for speeding and one for not wearing a seatbelt. The two people who were caught speeding were given a traffic offence report. Brackets, capital letters, T-O-R, bracket, and a spokesman for the police said, road safety continues to be the local priority for neighbourhood officers in Broadland.
A man accused of intentionally strangling a woman as part of a series of assaults against her is due to stand trial. Liam Cottingham was charged with an offence of intentional strangulation against the woman between January 16th and January 18th this year. Cottingham has also been accused of one offence of assault occasioning actual bodily harm against the same woman between those dates. In addition, the 33-year-old stands charged with two offences of assault by beating against the woman, one between January 15th and 18th this year and another on December the 31st, as well as an offence of damaging property, a mobile phone, on December the 31st last year. Cottingham of Dragonfly Way, Holt, denied all five offences when he appeared at Norwich Crown Court earlier this week. A trial expected to last 3 days will take place on July the 13th this year.
Aylsham Garden Centre was left with no electricity and significant smoke damage after a blaze. The incident took place on Monday, February 16th at 6:53 a.m. and fire crews from Aylsham and Sproston were called to the scene. Firefighters spent nearly an hour at the garden centre. Staff have confirmed that no one was hurt in the fire, but say there has been significant smoke damage inside the building, particularly around the staff and till areas. A spokesman for Aylsham Garden Centre said on Wednesday, February 16th, We will remain closed until at least the end of next week while this work takes place. Our current plan is to reopen in stages, with the restaurant likely to open first, followed by the garden centre once further areas have been cleaned and signed off. The building has been confirmed as structurally safe and professional cleaning teams are working to get everything properly restored. A spokesman for the Garden Centre added, "We've been overwhelmed by the kind messages and support from so many of you over the past few days. Thank you."
A beach in Norfolk has been crowned one of the best in Europe, beating destinations in Ibiza, Rhodes and Sardinia. TripAdvisor has released its Traveller's Choice Best of the Best Beaches list for 2026, which highlights the destinations that have earned the best reviews over the last year. Horsey came in 13th, ranking it higher than gorgeous white sand beaches, including Cala Comte in Ibiza, Zambica Beach in Rhodes, and Cala Marilu in Sardinia. Horsey is best known for the thousands of grey seals that come to breed on the shore between October and February. The travel site said it feels wide open and wonderfully calm, with long stretches of clean sand made for wandering. Take in sweeping North Sea views and be sure to keep an eye out for seals, the summary continued. Gorston Beach made the list in 2025, but it does not feature this year. This is not the first time Horsey has earned acclaim. Last year, it was named one of Britain's best in an article by The Telegraph.
Cottage, just a stone's throw away from an award-winning beach, has sold for 10 times its guide price at auction. Fox Corner Cottage in Wells Next at Sea was initially listed at £19,000 by Paul Foch Auctions. The first bid for the cottage came in at £21,000, making a total of 109 bids. The two-bedroom cottage eventually sold for £192,000. Sean Roper of Paul Foch Auctions said, "It's hardly surprising that there was such a strong attraction and bidder interest in this truly beautiful little cottage. It really is the kind of seaside property people dream about owning and living in." He predicted the property, if purchased as a holiday-let investment, could probably achieve around £1,200 per week. Situated in Church Street, the end terrace house features internal exposed brickwork, stripped old pine doors, a feature fireplace, and exposed oak beams. It also includes a sizeable integrated garage that could be converted for residential use. According to the HM Land Registry, the average house price in Wells is £395,000, making the property an undeniable bargain for the buyer.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of The Mardler, with readings from the North Norfolk News. If you have any comments or queries, you can contact our listener liaison officer, Imogen Waterson, on 01263 587 610.
Perhaps we should just mention that if you have a smartphone, tablet or computer, or know someone who has, you can listen to this and other editions online at mardler.org.uk. You can also use an Alexa smart speaker, a variety of smartphone apps, or even a telephone call to listen. Find out the details on our website, mardler.org.uk.
We rely on receiving your returned memory sticks and pouches so that we can continue to send you new editions each week. So please remember to return the pouches and memory stick promptly, making sure to reverse the address label first.
The sound engineer today was Richard Preston. Editing and producing this issue was Manny Gomez. We also say a farewell to our reader, Paul Cross. Thank you, Paul. Our colleagues in the copying and dispatch room join us in wishing you the best of health, and we look forward to joining you again in a week's time. But for now, it's
cheerio!